I'm Phyllis Brandt, and I will be talking this week about relationships, about healthy relationships. And we're starting tonight with the most essential first step in being healthy in relationships, and that is the relationship that we have with ourselves. We'll be talking a little bit about what that means for you when you hear the words love yourself, loving yourself, and I'll be asking you to be thinking about that together in a minute or two. I'd like to talk a little bit about why I started with that and where we're going to go through the rest of the week in case you're wondering what's the thought process that we're going to be using. After tonight, you will be totally convinced that you should love yourself or else I'll feel like I haven't done my job. Well, that's a joke, but I'm hoping that there will be some thoughts for you about how seriously I really would like you to take your relationship with yourself and staying healthy. The next session that I'll be doing is on Wednesday, and at that time, we'll be taking a look at some of the messages you got with your little radar as a little kid that you picked up from your parents, that you picked up from your whole family of origin, that you picked up from society growing up as a male or a female. We're going to take a look at what are some of those messages and how many of them do you want to still live with and how many of them are affirming and you'd like to keep those. The next session on Thursday, we'll be talking about how most of us grew up with uneven parenting. We didn't get everything we needed. Now, as a parent, I know I don't give my kids everything they need, so I'm not trying to put any blame on anybody. But the reality is that most of us had parenting that left some holes and some gaps. And we're going to take a look at what that means in terms of how we view ourselves and how we relate to other people based on that experience in our childhood. The following day, I'd like to explore with you the whole idea of feelings. As human beings, we are feeling beings. And we all have these little gauges of all the different kinds of feelings. And sometimes we learn how to turn those off. And we do ourselves a disservice by not letting ourselves know what we're feeling. So we'll explore that together. And on Saturday, the final day of this group of presentations, we'll be talking about intimacy and closeness, being open and available to people, and what some of the barriers are for that in terms of all kinds of relationships. It could be a spouse, it could be in our work, it could be with our children, our parents, our friends, or the community that we relate to. So that's an overview. But as I said, I would like to start with the most important part of all that process of relating to other people, and that is the step, the essential step, of your relationship with yourself. I put up here, and I don't know if you can all see it, so I'll read it, a quote that I really like from Virginia Satir. We need to see ourselves as basic miracles and worthy of love. And we're going to be talking about ways that we nurture and care for ourselves, and I like this. I think the Babylonians were in Holden when they wrote it. Three things restore a person's good spirits: beautiful sounds, sights, and the smell of bread. I think that's why you feel so healthy, or why, at least for myself, why I feel so healthy when I leave Holden. Because I had all of those in abundance. And if I'm a little scratchy, it's because the beautiful sound that was being made over in the choir practice of the Alleluia chorus has taken a toll on my measly soprano voice. So if I drink some water, it's because I have been preparing, hopefully, as a part of some beautiful sounds for tomorrow. Okay, let's start with our relationship with ourselves. What does that mean? That we love ourselves, that we have a healthy self-regard, a nurturing attitude for the person who we are. And why is that important? Well, one reason I'd like to give you for why that's important is because when you have a relationship with another person, that relationship is just about as healthy as those two people in that relationship are. You can think of any relationship that you have with a child, a spouse, a friend, a parent, as a separate entity. For example, there's you, and there's the other person. And together, the two of you, at any level of relationship, even an acquaintance down to the most intimate relationship you have, you create another relationship. You create something else outside of the two of you. Now, if this person is healthy, and this person is healthy, two healthy people create a healthy relationship. If this person is unhealthy, and this person is also unhealthy, it's not like two rights make a wrong, or two pluses make a minus, or whatever it is. It doesn't work that way. These two unhealthy people can only create an unhealthy relationship. So if you are in a relationship with a person, which you are in many ways, you will need to be as healthy as you can be to contribute health to that relationship. For example, let's say this person is fairly healthy, but this person has some characteristics which make them unavailable for a healthy relationship. For example, this person could be addicted to substances. Now, you know enough about addiction, I'm sure, to know that an addiction is stronger than any love. And that person's strongest relationship is with the substance. So they are going to be moving in this direction and not contributing a lot of health to that relationship. If this person is addicted to a process, and by a process I could mean gambling, I could mean shopping, I could mean being a workaholic, I could mean being a sex addict, I could mean being a religious addict, I could mean being a compulsive shopper, a super busy person who's too busy to contribute anything to the relationship. Any of those unhealthy stances would detract from this relationship. All this is to say that it is very important for each person in a relationship to be healthy, to contribute to the life and the health of that relationship. Okay, here's another reason why I feel you should love yourself and have a healthy relationship with yourself. Wherever you go, there you are. You can go on vacation. You can move to another house. You can move across the country or to another part of the planet. You can get a new job. You can get a new spouse. But any of those changes that you make mean you are still there. So as long as you're there, you might as well be healthy. Another reason why I feel you should be have a nurturing relationship with yourself, and that is that you can be your own best friend, and you are the longest-term companion in your life. You can be your own best friend in a better way than anyone else. Now, if you're like me, you'd love to have somebody read your mind and know just exactly what you want. Not only know what you want to give it to you. Well, that, as you know, doesn't really work that way. And you know better what you need. You know better what is going to make you feel happy and fulfilled and having your needs met better than anybody else. So if you don't offer that in a relationship, letting people know what you want and what you need, the chances of getting it are obviously less. Okay, and on a spiritual level, it's my feeling, or my belief, that on some deep level in our spiritual life, we need to recognize how lovable we are. And my feeling is, if we don't recognize how lovable we are, I don't think we can really appreciate God's love for us. I think in some way we're denying it. And that's a theological point, and that's just an opinion of mine. But I think on a spiritual level, it's important to love ourselves because then we can understand how God can love us. It's also true that if we can value and appreciate and nourish ourselves, then other people can be let in to do that. If we don't love ourselves, how's anybody else going to? And if we don't love ourselves, how are we going to let other people love us? And that's a part of a relationship that might be harder, is the intake. Maybe we're better at the outgo, at giving, than we are receiving. But if we truly love ourselves, we can let other people love us. We aren't fearful of letting people get too close. I entitled this Loving Yourselves, The Gift That Keeps On Giving. Well, tomorrow's Christmas, so isn't this a good time to talk about gifts? Because it's now Christmas Eve, really. And the gift that keeps on giving is the gift that you give to yourself with the purpose of continuing that care for other people. When we talk about loving ourselves, it's not a dead end. It doesn't mean that is the ultimate of our life or the purpose of our life, but it's a flowing through us and onto other people. And I truly believe that the healthier we are, the more easily and more generously we can give to others. Some of you, probably a lot of you, have read Anne Mora Lindbergh's Gifts from the Sea. She uses an illustration there of a pitcher and how we are all pitchers, and there are times when we're all poured out. We have nothing left to give, and that's a time that we need to fill back up. Just for a moment, I'd like you to think of a time when you were able to give out of a very sense of fullness. You were able to, let's say, plan a birthday celebration, plan a dinner, listen to somebody in a crisis, give of your time, your energy, your attention, of yourself. Think of a time when you gave it and it felt so good because you were so full that you had a lot to give. Just for a moment, think of a time. And bring back that feeling of how good that was to give out of a full place. Now, in contrast, I'd like you to think, and I'm sure if you're like me, there have been times when you were so frazzled or so tired or so burned out, but you still did something because maybe you'd said you would, maybe you felt you had to. And think of how that felt to give. Even feel it in your body. How did that feel? For me, a time like that was my mother died on Good Friday. And on the Saturday before Easter, let's see, my sons were 4 and 6, and my daughter was a few months old, so she wasn't into coloring eggs. But I remember thinking to myself, I never knew coloring eggs could be so exhausting. Then I realized I was fatigued. I was totally physically fatigued and emotionally distraught. And I was attempting to give them something that had been a part of our tradition to do. And it felt like it took every ounce of my energy to color those eggs. Whereas on some other time, I would not have felt that way. So I'm hoping what you have felt as you were thinking of that is the difference of giving from a time when you have taken care of yourself and you are feeling full, and the difference of feeling spent, used up, with no energy to give. Right now, what I'd like you to think about is, what do you think of? What comes to your mind when you hear the words, loving yourself? Just think for a second about that. And then I'm going to ask you to find a partner in twos and share, just brainstorming, what comes up in your mind when you hear that phrase, loving yourself. Take a moment and then find a partner, and we'll have about 2 minutes for you to share what are those thoughts that you have. Okay, just between the two of you, what thoughts do you have when you hear loving yourself? Stop. I heard lots of buzz, and it sounded real exciting. What I'd like to have is just throw out either what you or your partner said, just the brief phrases that to get a feel for what everybody was expressing. Just throw it out. What did you share with each other about what thoughts came to you when you hear the phrase loving yourself?
Taking care of yourself.
Okay.
Accepting me for who I am and not somebody I think I'd like to be.
Great.
Doing what I want to do.
Doing what you want to do.
Forgiveness.
Forgiveness.
Self-centered.
Sharing.
Feeling of self-worth, sharing, self-centered.
Feeling adequate.
It's not easy to do.
Not easy to do. Feeling adequate.
Think about it.
Egotistical. It's not let anyone, the caretaker part of me, not let anyone hurt me.
physically, mentally, spiritually.
Okay, setting limits so that you're not hurt?
Or else just caring for myself, though even the statement maybe it's made to me that I can not get hurt by it.
Okay.
That's loving myself.
Good, good.
I think contentment.
Contentment.
Giving up resentments.
Giving up resentments.
Having my security and my significance come out of God and not other people or circumstances.
Great.
Not being so hard on myself.
Not being so hard on yourself. Handling your temper. Okay, there's a variety of things that we heard. Some of them were, actually I didn't hear very many physical things, like getting a back rub or putting your feet up when you're tired. I don't think I heard very many physical things. I would have expected to hear a little bit more of that. In fact, it's more, I think you're more advanced than that because you're already talking about emotional and spiritual needs, which is a little bit higher on the chain of needs in terms of taking care of yourself. Let's take a look a little bit at maybe some sides that some of you were thinking of, things like self-centered, ego-involved, narcissistic, selfish. Were there some thoughts about that?
Yes, I said I don't love myself. I like myself. I think I'm a real nice guy. But I'm not narcissist and I don't love myself. It's simple.
Okay, how would you define the difference between love and like yourself?
Very strong difference. I can talk for hours on the subject.
Give us 60 seconds.
Can you give us a Reader's Digest, kind of a synopsis of what you're saying?
I'm not sure if I can. You know, it takes longer to prepare for a one-minute speech than it does for a one-hour speech. Would you like a one-hour speech? I prepare for
Let's
that.
Let's talk to Julie and see if we can schedule it.
I'll give you a pitch.
Okay. Okay, I anticipated that there's an attitude that we need to look at, and that would be an attitude of saying, this is self-involvement, navel-gazing, or ego-building to talk about loving ourselves. So I expect I think that's a part maybe of our culture, maybe a part of our growing up messages of don't just think of yourself, some kinds of thoughts about care for others. You know, don't look inward. But like I said before, here's how I'd like you to think about it. If this is you, I'd like you to think about finding ways to pour into, fill yourself up, so that through you, love and caring can go to somebody else, and not think of it as a dead end. Now, I don't know if that helps you at all, but I'd like to suggest that. Well, I'd like to focus on two parts of self-nurturing, or self-care, or self-love, or self-valuing. The first is attitude, and then we'll talk a little bit about action. But what do I mean by a self-nurturing attitude? One thing I would say is that it's an attitude of unconditional love and acceptance. And I liked how you put that over there, that I don't have to be something else. I am who I am, and I can accept that. It also means no matter what happens to you or where you are, that you love yourself. Maybe you can love yourself in your home and your den, but when you get out into a public situation or a party, social situation, or maybe with relatives that you have to see on a reunion and you don't like, then you begin to not like yourself in the same way. But self-love means you love yourself wherever you are, in whatever setting, in whatever the situation calls for. I think self-nurturing also includes asking ourselves, lovingly and gently, what do I need? What do I need to do to feel good? To take that kind of inventory. And to do that, you need to know what you need, or what we all need. So I thought it might be helpful to go through just briefly, what are all the things that we need to meet? What needs do we need to meet daily for ultimate or optimum physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional health? And once again, I think it's so easy to meet these needs at Holden, and that's why we go back feeling refreshed, because so many of them are just built in. Quickly, our needs that we need every day are fresh air. And for example, if you're really wanting to take a stock of meeting your needs and you're in your normal situation, to meet your need for fresh air might mean that you have to leave the smoking room in the place where you work. Or ask asking for a non-smoking part of an airplane if that smoke bothers you, or opening the window at night to cool it off. But there's things that you need to be aware of in terms of your air. Food, nutritious food, food that's going to be good for you. It might mean giving up the junk food or the snacks that aren't good for you. Drinking enough water, having enough touch. And I think that Gary and Linda would say, if you don't have enough touch, go down to Peru, because you'll get more of it built into your environment than us northern types get up here. How many hugs a day do we need? And I've heard 8, and I've heard 20, and I'll go for all I get, but I'm not sure how many we need. But
that's probably more than just physical touch, meaning verbal hugs. There's other kinds of...
That's a good point. I think this physical. One would just be the actual physical touch that we all need. Because we'll get into some of the others, I think, like the affection that might work with him. Freedom from discomfort. It might mean deciding not to wear those peaky high heels that women get stuck with, and deciding to wear comfortable shoes, or taking an Advil if you have a headache. But we need to be free from discomfort. That's a real basic need. Okay, I'm going through these quickly, but I would like to suggest that when you're nurturing yourself, taking care of yourself, you have an idea of all the various kinds of needs we have to meet. Another one is adequate sleep, kinesthetic movement. We need to get out, move. A lot of our jobs don't allow for that. Affection and love, that would fit with verbal kinds of hugs. The give and take, this would be both giving affection and receiving. We have to be able to do both, really, to feel our best. Respect for ourselves, which means we will do what we need to do to keep us enriched. I love to go to art galleries, but yet I don't find myself going as often as I would like to, or art museums. And when I go, I think, oh, this is so great. Why don't I do this more often? But to respect myself, I would meet that need, or to listen to music, or to whatever it is that you do that respects who you are and your interests and your appreciations. We also need to have a feeling of skill and competence. How many times have you had a day where absolutely everything goes wrong? No matter what you do, it doesn't work out. Well, what you're feeling is zero on the scale of skill to competence. And it really wrecks your day. I mean, it can. You know, you just feel like, whew, shouldn't have even tried today. It didn't come off at all. Okay, moving up the scale to higher level of needs. Understanding, enlightenment, meeting our mental needs for stimulation, growth, new ideas, challenge, to think in new ways, new concepts. Spiritual well-being. I don't know if I need to define that. Seems like that would be easy for you to understand. You need to have a feeling of power and choices. It might be saying no to that party on Friday night when you feel like, you know, I'm just not into it. It's going to be a drag because I just don't feel it's what I want to do. But being able to say no, also being able to say yes, both sides of power and choices to make us feel that we have met our needs in that area. And last of all, appreciation of nature, beauty, and arts. Now, I would suggest if you ever are in a time when you're going through a crisis, when you're feeling there's some adjustments you're going through, or you're just feeling kind of shaky, you know, when you have one of those kind of gray winters when, you know, you just don't know why, but everything just feels like a dissonant chord in your life. I would suggest that during that time, you make a chart and put all of these things on it and make Monday to Sunday or Sunday to Monday or Sunday to Saturday or whatever, and check off how you're doing on all of these needs. And it is amazing how you can get out of that feeling disgruntled, feeling you're not moving, like you're stuck, because somewhere along the line you will identify, I'm not meeting some need in some area. And even if you do it in a good time, you will become aware of how much there is to do to keep yourself at ultimate or at optimum positive energy. It's really a learning experience to do that. And if I'd had enough arm power, I would have brought you all these handouts, but they're each 3 pages, and I was afraid I wouldn't be able to do that. Okay, so what I'm saying is to ask yourself, what do I need? What am I missing? Have I gone for a long time without meeting one of these needs? And you will be on a deficit situation if that happens, if you don't meet those needs over a long period of time. Ask any new mother about this one. You remember that deficit in sleep? It takes over your life. That's all you think in the whole world. I'd really like to do is just have a one night of sleep. Okay, another point I'd like to make. Self-nurturing is asking yourself when you're hurting, what can I do to feel better? I have a friend who recently went to court because she had to get some child support for her daughter. And she had a really awful experience. She felt like the other attorney had just grilled her and had said things that really were not true, and she was just feeling really raw and ragged when she left. And so she decided that what she really needed to do was to get a massage. She needed to just let somebody tend to her body to get the kinks and all the stiffness and the emotional distress she was going through. And I called, this was just last week, and I called her and asked her to come over to Gig Harbor for an art fair because I knew that that would be one way to bring some positive, creative expression back as a counterbalance to that day. And she said she couldn't believe how much that had helped her. And she was proud of herself for thinking of it, because she said, in the past, I never would have thought of that. I wouldn't have allowed myself that. But she said it really helped me to more quickly gain my sense of balance, just allowing herself that treat and that pleasure of the massage. Another way to self-nurture. Imagine that you are your own coach. And you are going to give yourself all those kind of coaching, supportive statements that you hear. I was playing tennis last week. I was in Central Oregon and with my sister. And we were playing tennis, and next to us was this tennis coach. And he was just wonderful. He was working with two kids that were probably like 12 and 14. He called them each by name. He'd say, "That was great, Stephanie. That's really great, Andrew. That's the way to do it. Now next time, try this. Way to go." He just had this sort of litany going of positive reinforcement and support, and I thought, God, I wonder if I could hire him. I need it, because I'm not that good at tennis. And he even made me feel good. Now, he wasn't even coaching me, but just hearing that. How about thinking of yourself as being your own coach? And imagine you have your own little Walkman, and as you walk around and you're doing things, or you're in a situation where you're a little nervous about how you're going to do, or this situation's going to turn out, be your own coach. And give yourself your own messages that you can do it. This is going to be okay. I am competent. And no matter what happens, I'm still an okay person. That kind of coaching. And then when we make a mistake, once in a while, and once in a blue moon, you'll probably find you make a mistake. Or maybe more often than that. So what happens when you make a mistake? Are you going to berate yourself? Or are you going to say, such an idiot. Boy, what a stupid person. Obviously, that's not a way to love yourself, because you're just putting all kinds of negative stuff through your own little tape deck going up in your head. What another approach to that, a self-nurturing way, would be, what can I learn from this mistake, and what can I do different next time? I had a chance with my daughter, who's 17. Last week, I was in Oregon with my sister, and she was working because she's starting college and she needs to have all her money for college. So I got home on Thursday, and she had this note. "Dear Mom, this was one of the most horrible weeks I ever had. We bought a house, and we're having the bathroom remodeled, and we're adding a utility porch." And she unfortunately had to be there while all this stuff was there, cutting vents for a gas furnace. So she said, "These workmen here was really a hassle." And she said, "I had a horrible argument with her boyfriend, Scott, and we didn't talk to each other all week." And she says, "Mom, when am I going to grow up?" "I love you very much, Maria." So I decided to write her a note because she was going to be working later than I was going to be going to bed. So I wrote, "Dear Maria, I missed you very much too, and I'm sorry about the hassle you had." Then I said, "Growing up for everybody is hard. I put it off a long time and it wasn't any easier. Let's talk tomorrow and see where we are about it. I love you too, Mom." So the next day we went out for breakfast, partly because we both had to go to the bathroom, and since we were hooking up the water heater, we couldn't use any plumbing in my house. So we went out for breakfast and to the bathroom, which was the first thing we did. And so we had a long talk, and what she had, the mistake she felt she had made was that she was mad at her boyfriend because he wanted to do something with somebody else, some other friends, and she wanted him to come over and see her. And she realized she didn't want to have that kind of a clutching hold on him, but that was where she was when they had this argument. So we talked about, well, next time, what would you do? And what I hoped to do for her was something I do better for her than I do for myself. Because sometimes we do that for other people better. To give them permission to make mistakes, to learn from it, and to go on. But I said part of growing up is making a mistake. And I said to myself, part of being this age is making a mistake. It doesn't stop when you grow up, or you feel that you're as old as emotionally as you're going to get. So loving ourselves is giving ourselves permission to make mistakes and to learn from them, to be gentle with ourselves about them. Self-nurturing is doing all the wonderful things for ourselves that we would like to have had other people do for us. And you can think creatively for yourself what that would be. If you know what your needs are and you love yourself, you will find out what it is that you need to do for yourself. So we're there for ourselves. We aren't abandoning ourselves emotionally. We're not letting ourselves just go through this negative time with negative self-talk and negative messages. Instead, we're taking care of ourselves to make ourselves feel safe and to make ourselves feel loved. The second part of attitude is to remove the negatives or the roadblocks. Maybe it's not real easy to think about loving yourself. I could say, yes, I love myself, but, and then add something here. In fact, that's kind of fun to do. Take a piece of paper, start writing, I, Dave, love myself, and then see what comes up and write it down. And keep going until you don't have any more qualifiers. You don't have any more, but if I lost 10 pounds, I'd love myself better. Or, I love myself, but I wish I could control my temper. Keep writing, I love myself, until you get to the point where you don't have anything and you're just writing that. It's kind of fun to do. But back to removing the negatives. We're going to talk about that tomorrow when we're talking about negative messages, but I'd like to just give you one example of what I mean by that. I have a friend named Kathy, and when we both lived in Santa Monica, California, we were both potters, and I had a studio, and she would come over and glaze her pots in my studio, and I would fire them. So a lot of our conversations were around the time when we were working in this pottery studio. And she would come in and she would say, what are we ever going to do when we grow up? We both had young kids, we're both godparents for each of our other's children, and it was like, this is okay for now, but what are we going to do when we grow up? And it was just a joke, you know, we thought of it that way. Well, as the years went along, it didn't seem so funny to me anymore. Because I thought, I wonder what she is going to do when she grows up. Because she tried a lot of different careers. She went to a career counselor. And no matter what she tried, it never felt right for her. It was not something that she could stick with. And she was still like always searching, what am I going to do when I grow up? Well, she's now 41. Yeah, she is, I think, 41. She lives in Alexandria, Virginia, but she was in Seattle in March, and we went out for lunch, and she says, I have to tell you what happened while I was in therapy. And I said, well, I really like to hear what happened. And she said, I figured it out. I figured out why I couldn't figure out what I was going to do when I grew up. Well, I said, well, what happened? She said, it's so simple. I said, well, often it is, but what is it? She said, I could never do things right for my mom. No matter what I did, it was never right. So her approach to life was, I'm not going to try anything, because whatever I choose, it's not going to be right with my mom. Now she said, isn't that simple? And I said, well, it's really simple, but it's not that easy. Those roadblocks, those negative things that we have that keep us from being who we really are and loving who we really are, they're buried deep. And sometimes it takes digging, it takes reading, it might take therapy, it might take a friend who gives us feedback. It takes a process of trying to figure out why is something in the way of my really valuing and appreciating who I am and allowing myself the growth that is a natural part of growing and changing. So I'll let it go at that, because we'll talk more about those negative and those roadblocks tomorrow, or Wednesday. And I'd like to add another one. How do you love yourself? You affirm all the positives that you have. I mean, this room is just an incredible room full of talent, a room full of potentials and capabilities and competencies. I mean, it's just amazing what's all this room. But I think sometimes I could see it better than you can, because that's really normal. The things that we do well, it's just so easy because we do it. We don't see the value that we have. I think other people see it. So when somebody gives you a compliment, often what we do is shrug it off, or we don't let it in. And I would like to suggest that the next time somebody gives you a compliment, you think about it as this wonderful cup of tea with a fragrant, savory smell and taste, and you're going to drink that tea and you're going to taste it all the way down, let it warm you up, and just enjoy the taste without rushing back and giving somebody else a compliment, without just saying, oh, this dress, it's an old thing, I just used to have it around the house, and making a discounted kind of compliment for the person who was giving you something. Okay, now I'm going to test you out. I'm going to ask you to talk to the same person that you talked to. Now you have to follow the rules. Here's the rules. You are going to tell that person a compliment. And that person is going to give you a compliment. And there are only two answers you can give. You only have two choices when that person gives you a compliment of what you can say. Okay? One is, thank you. I think so too. The other one is, thank you. Would you say that again? Okay, now those are the rules. You can only say thank you, I think so too, and thank you. Please say it again.
No.
Oh, and I can hear everybody. Okay, I want you to do that right now with the same people that you talked to. Give each other a compliment and respond. A Cheshire cat grins. A lot of kind of glowing cheeks and an awful lot of laughter and giggling. Now, maybe you're embarrassed to say, thank you, I think so too, and maybe you're laughing for that reason. I'm hoping it was because it was a lot of fun to have to do that. Where you had to let that compliment in. You could not deflect it in any way. So, what I want you to do is try people out in the next few days. Try each other out and see if you can catch each other. No deflecting compliments. We're just drinking in that tea and savoring who we are and what people tell us. I'd like to do one more point about the attitude of self-nurturing that I think would be helpful. And that is what I would call having a healthy perspective on ourselves and on others and on life. Actually, what we believe in our head, our cognitive stuff, has a lot of influence. Oops.
Put your other pen.
He put a blue pen there that probably writes better.
Oh, okay. Maybe this one spells better, too. It's fine.
Is that a negative comment or a positive comment?
They don't talk back. I love myself even if I make spelling mistakes. Okay. There's kind of a circular thing that happens with our emotions and our actions and our beliefs and our thoughts. What we believe, if we have an unconscious belief or even a conscious belief, will affect how we think. And how we think will affect our emotions. For example, if I think that it's really important that every single person here likes me, my emotions can get really upset if I see somebody just walk out. But if I think, there are probably reasons why people walk out, like I sometimes have to go to the bathroom, so I would leave. And it may not have anything at all to do with how they're responding to me. But if I think everybody has to like me, my emotions can be affected in ways that are not even healthy or helpful at all. Our emotions will affect our actions. How we feel will affect what we do. And then our actions will again put us back into what we believe. So we can have a real negative thing going. Well, where do we break the cycle? Let's start right here with the cognitive. And let's examine some of the things that we do to ourselves to give us an unhealthy perspective, or what we can do to change that. Can you tell I've been a teacher? I'm a visual learner. I can hardly learn anything unless I can see it. So if it doesn't help you at all, it's not a problem for me. But for those that are visual, maybe it will help. Okay, the first one. We really can believe that everybody doesn't have to love me. That I can enjoy being liked or loved, but I don't have to be loved by everybody. I can't make anybody love me any more than anybody can make me love somebody else. And I really don't need everybody's approval all the time. It's okay to make mistakes. We've talked about that. Mistakes are human. We're human. In fact, wouldn't you hate to live with somebody that didn't ever make a mistake? I mean, sometimes some of the mistakes, you know, like my kids, I could get along without some of their mistakes. But, I mean, I'd rather live with a human being than some kind of a saint. It's okay to make mistakes. You're still fine, acceptable, worthwhile people, and I can accept mistakes in other people. The problem is if we believe we can't make mistakes, we're pretty hard on everybody else because they're equally under that same kind of guideline. Then they can't make mistakes either, and that's pretty hard to live with in a relationship. Other people are okay, and I'm okay. We're all different. You may not agree with me, but that doesn't mean either of us are bad. There's no moral judgment. We can accept other people's opinions, other people's contributions. We don't have to control other people. We don't have to change it. If we believe that we're okay but other people aren't, we're not going to be healthy in a relationship. If we believe other people are okay but we're not, we're also not going to be healthy in a relationship. Another helpful perspective. I don't have to control things. I can accept that things are the way they are. Sometimes there's flies and mosquitoes. Sometimes it rains. Sometimes the garbage man doesn't come on the right day. Things like that happen. I can't control all of life. And yet there's things that I can do to feel positive. I can take responsibility for what I can do. But I don't have to try to control everything. And I'm responsible for my day. If it's a rotten day, it's not really your fault. It's not your fault to make me feel good. It's not your job to make me feel good. You don't have the responsibility to change how I feel or how I think. In the same way, I don't have a responsibility to make somebody else's life better. It takes you off the hook, and it lets you come to a person in a less needy and less caretaking way. Okay, I can handle it when things go wrong. Have you ever thought about how many times you might lose keys in your life? Or how many times you can't find the scissors? Or how many times other kind of things go wrong? You run out of gas? You lock your keys in your car? But we can handle it when things go wrong. That doesn't have to be the end of the world. We can find a way. We can problem solve. It's important to try. I always feel bad. I'm a school counselor, and I always feel bad when kids say, well, I don't want to take that class because I don't know if I'll do very good in it. And I think, my goodness, you're only in 6th, 7th, or 8th grade. Isn't this the time to try things? To try out things? You don't have to be that focused on success. Absolute a guarantee that you're going to get an A in the class to try something. And I think that that's an attitude that we need to allow ourselves. The trying. The putting ourselves in that situation, the testing of ourselves, the drawing of ourselves out is an important part of allowing ourselves to grow. It's okay to try. I've been trying to do a cartwheeler since I was small. I don't think I'm ever going to get it. But, you know, there's some things you just can't do. But still, it's still important to try. I am capable. to really believe that you can solve problems. You might need help. We all need somebody to help us out at times. We can't solve them on our own. But to truly believe that in the best of situations and in the worst of situations, somehow I'm going to come through, that I truly believe I can do that. I can change. You don't have to be the same person that you were 10 years ago. You don't even have to think the same way you did yesterday. It's okay to grow and change. You don't have to stay rigid. And other people also are capable. So these are healthy perspectives that I think will help us when we're dealing with other people in relationships. We get kind of bogged down if we believe the opposite of each of those. So just to recap, and then we'll go on. When we love and accept and nurture ourselves, we energize ourselves, we empower ourselves, we relax enough to do our best, we enable ourselves to love and to grow, and we do the same for others. And the secret of a relationship is if you can allow yourself to love yourself and allow yourself to love another person, it becomes an ongoing spiral, a chain reaction. But remember that it starts with yourself. It starts with your own attitude toward yourself. Okay, the other thing that we were going to talk about was attitudes and actions, the two A words. Attitudes about ourselves and actions about ourselves. We're going to choose things to do that are going to give us the consequences that we want, that meet the needs that we have. What I'd like to do right now is to have you think about something that you can do, something you can do to take care of yourself in the next 24 hours. That means, by my watch, by 7:39 on Christmas Day, you will have done something for yourself. Some action, some emotional thought, some need that you came to meet, and maybe you can do that tomorrow. I want you right now to make a contract, a promise, or a statement to that same person that you talked to about something that you can identify right now that you will do for yourself in the next 24 hours. Okay, think about it, and then when you're ready, talk to the person that you're talking with and tell them what you're going to do for yourself. What would you like to share? Anybody have any thoughts or questions or comments? Yeah.
Doesn't a lot of this come from your job, though? A lot of things that control your feelings and life about how you approach your job or like your job. Doesn't it control a lot of your life?
Control a lot of your time, probably, and a lot of your energy. But are you talking about controlling in unhealthy ways?
Right.
Like what?
Well, if you're not always happy at work, I would think it would over enter into your private life.
Yeah, and it would mean that you would probably need to work harder at the non-work time to get yourself back into balance. I teach a class in healthy relationships for teachers, and by the first part of June, they all have these glazed over eyes, and they're just kind of, you know, like, when's the end of the year kind of thing. So I can relate to that, the work pressures and the kind of stress and what we need to do to get ourselves back in balance. And I would suspect from people I've talked to here, the kind of demanding jobs that you have would equally be... Is that a question you're personally searching for in some way? Is there any way I can help you with that?
No,
you can answer. Okay, great. Thanks for that comment. That was really good. Yeah?
For a person who has learned to not value themselves, either through being abused as a child, perhaps, or not having parents that appreciated them as people, the pretty deep-seated emotional vacuum. Is cognitive enough to break that cycle?
And no.
You basically presented
cognitive. No, that's a good point. I'm glad you said that, because I didn't really mean to think that that could be all of it, because it certainly is experiential also. But I think that there's a part of the cognitive to rethink. Because I think as you rethink, I am lovable and I am important, you're going to act in that way and you're going to begin to respond. But it is a long process. And for some people who have been deeply scarred, I really feel that there's a need for therapy or groups or a support group or some very significant people in their life to take a a different stand than the one they've experienced.
I guess the reason that I say that is number six up there, you say, I can handle it when things go wrong. There are people that can't because of that lack.
Because of, as a child in a situation.
Yeah, because they have not been taught the skills to be able to deal with things when they go wrong.
And so that would be a therapeutic goal for them, to learn how to handle and how to protect themselves. Like sexual abuse victims, to learn how to keep this from happening again, to teach them those kind of skills.
Yeah. Are you going to talk about feelings? The same kind of thing, like modification in number three, like other people are okay and I'm okay, that almost can say you can't have negative feelings. You know, you can't have anger. You know, because there are times I'm dishonest, I'm nasty, you know.
Oh, I can be a real grump.
You know, and so I just want to...
I'm not saying that people are okay in every single aspect of their life on every moment of every day.
And then that's okay to be that way at times,
but too. But they are okay as basic people worthy of respect and dignity and
nurturing. Just so we don't discount our feelings.
Come back again on Friday, because we are going to talk about that. That's really important. Right. Our feelings are a very important part of this whole process. Okay, I appreciate your comments. Any more? Okay, I know we need to go. I have one thing I want to read by an 85-year-old woman from Kentucky. If I had my life to live over, I'd dare to make more mistakes next time. I'd relax. I'd limber up. I would be sillier than I have been this time. I would take fewer things seriously. I would take more chances. I would take more trips. I would climb more mountains and swim more rivers. I would eat more ice cream and less beans. I would perhaps have more actual troubles, but I'd have fewer imaginary ones. You see, I'm one of those people who live sensibly and sanely, hour after hour, day after day. Oh, I've had my moments, and if I had to do it over again, I'd have more of them. In fact, I'd try to have nothing else. Just moments, one after another, instead of living so many years ahead of each day. I've been one of those persons who never goes anywhere without a thermometer, a hot water bottle, a raincoat, and a parachute. If I had to live my life over, I would start barefoot earlier in the spring, and I would stay that way later in the fall. I would go to more dances. I would ride more merry-go-rounds. I would pick more daisies. Thanks for coming, and take care.